Good morning, this is JB.
Hi, JB, it's Joey. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Joey. And yourself?
I'm doing all right, thanks. So I'm in the middle of a move, and you know, the world's on fire, but I'm okay.
Oh boy, really?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you're moving to better places.
Yeah, I'm excited. excuse me.
Well, then there it is.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest challenges of this time is just finding things to be excited about.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're moving for my husband's job. The last two times we moved, I was not very happy, and this is the first time that I am happy, so that's good.
And there you go. So where are you guys moving to?
We're moving to Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's actually nice out there for a good thing.
Yeah, I've been there a couple times. I was like, oh, wow, it's like a nice, big, thriving, very liberal city, so I'm excited.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I got to say, I love this movie. I had never heard of this movie. I had heard of Santoya's story, but I didn't know that Netflix did a documentary about it, and I think your work is really, really awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it like really like, I watched the movie again last night and then I was listening to the score and I just feel like a lot of it just really, I think the score does exactly what a good score should do and just pull you in without being like, without taking the whole thing over. It really just enhances everything.
And you know, funny, that was actually one of the main goals, was because so many people like yourself know the story.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand how it's going to end and that, you know, it has a, now I wouldn't quite call it a happy ending, but at least there's hope toward the end.
Yeah.
So the music really had to pull you in and help you experience the events anew from her perspective in real time over these 15 years. So that's exactly one of the things we wanted to do, was make sure the score pulled you in and help you experience it all afresh.
Yeah. Was that probably like the biggest pressure you had when approaching it? Like having, since you know, it became such like a big story that you wanted us to look at it from like a new perspective or new eyes?
Yeah. That was first and foremost the thing that we really wanted to accomplish with the score. There were two other things that we wanted to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
One was make sure that you felt something for the characters,
mm-hmm.
especially, you know, her mothers,
yeah.
that we get to know quite well. And also making sure that we really take a look at Santoya as a human being and really understand what she's going through. So it was about perspective and connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we achieved that was making sure we had room in the budget and the process for live musicians. And I wrote a very organic score using a chamber group of strings and piano.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to ask about the piano because I love that the piano is used throughout. And actually, not to go back to what you just said about connecting with her just as a person, I kept thinking while I was watching it that, especially when, you know, she's first in prison, I was like, she's a little girl. Like she's so young. It's just like her face and her, you know, her big eyes just broke my heart. So I wanted to ask about the choice for, using piano throughout. I love that you did that.
Well, part of it was I wanted to have this sense of constant motion,
mm-hmm.
And also a sense of polyphony. So I'll take those two separate pieces. One was there's a lot of piano ostinatos, so a mm-hmm. lot of the motors behind what's happening in these cues is the piano. And because I wanted to make sure that we had a sense that we were pushing through time, we were pushing mm-hmm. through this young lady's life. So there's this constant sort of thing that's happening, which, again, I implemented by having all these piano ostinatos. And then things were happening around that, which, again, was about giving us the momentum and propelling us through the story.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece is that with piano, you can not only play a melody, which I, you know, use melody throughout in the piano, but you can also do a simple counter melody.
Mm-hmm.
underneath it at the same time,
okay.
which lent a sense of hinting at a harmony, hinting at something deeper, hinting at something that we look under the surface, but at the same time, being part of that same texture. So it can be easily sort of lost unless you kind of dissect it.
Yeah.
And thinking about that now, that's kind of like Centoya's story, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to really look at her as an individual, her history, her family situation. Otherwise, because at the surface, we could just write her off.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's really beautiful, the way you look at the music. So, yeah, wow, I love that. And yeah, and you actually just mentioned something I wanted to ask about. You talked to, you briefly mentioned her mother's. I went back and I listened to the track of, you know, that was really the theme for her two mothers. Did you want to do, I don't want to say like two different things and put them together. You know what I mean? Like I wanted, like, how did you represent each woman in that piece of music, or what did you, how did you want to represent each woman there?
Okay. So,
yeah.
wow, hit me with the question.
Yeah.
So, for her two mothers, Gina being her biological mother, and why am I, the name of her adoptive mother? Elinette, thank you, Elinette. And Elinette, her adoptive mother, they are really two very different characters and obviously had two different impacts on Centoya's life.
Yeah.
For Gina, I felt that we wanted to focus on her backstory and understanding where her life took her previously and how that influenced what Centoya's life looked like. I know there was a lot of discussion about, you know, how she was drinking when she was pregnant with Centoya and how that how that affected her with the fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yeah.
So with her, it was really more a sense of heartbreak, tragedy, you know, her story of being abused, sexually abused as a young girl by her, you know, her family members, you know, all of that's just heartbreaking. And again, we can look at, you know, who's the outcome or, you know, who she is, and we could sort of write her off. But again, we've got to look deeper and understand, well, what are the systems, what were the events that shaped this woman and allowed her to where she was. So the music there really had to have a level of, I think, harmonic complexity. And I wouldn't quite say be atonal, but really pull from, you know, my jazz, where we have a lot of extended harmonies. So you'll notice when we come to her, the music is harmonically a little bit more complex and a little bit more sort of chordal based. We have some clusters because it really is a complicated story. And there's a lot of depth to this, to my mom, Gina, that I try to sort of reference in the music. And at the same time, you know, allow it to be rhythmically interesting to push us forward through the story. For Elinette, she really was the rock, right? And was really trying to provide a stable environment for Centoya to grow up and just show her love. And from that perspective, it ended up, I wanted to do something that was more rhythmically interesting. So I looked at using mixed meters and compound meters in the music so that this way we could have, again, that forward sense of propulsion, but always have it with a little bit of a surprise. So, you know, there's this one of her cues, the last 14 years, that's played underneath Elinette that goes from 4-4 to 4-4 to 5-8. So this way we have this sort of continual sort of skipping motion that's happening with the music there, which lends an idea of complexity, but again, sort of pushes us through the story in an interesting way.
Yeah. I love that the film, I mean, I will be fully honest, when we get to meet Gina, I thought the film was going to completely write her off. And then I was so happy that it delves into both women, really. And I love the music that plays underneath when Gina is, you know, she's walking through, it's near the end. It's like when she's walking through, like where that, you know, beaten up trailer is, and she's, she's going through those horrible things that happened to her. And I think the music there is very lovely. Very supportive, I would actually say, in a weird way. I just love that part of the film. As weird as it to say that, I love the music of that part of the film, I should say. I wanted to ask about some certain sections when I think it's the transfer section, parts 1 and 2. I got so I think it's cello beats, maybe. I'm not sure. I love how it feels like a thriller almost. I want to say, like, it really draws us in. Those beats are really sort of hypnotic. They pull us in, even though we know sort of where the story is going to go. It feels kind of like dangerous there. Can you sort of talk to me about any of the music that is playing whenever she, maybe in a proceeding or in a courtroom setting?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, those traditionally are the, you know, quote unquote action sequences in the film.
Yeah.
And we really wanted to make it feel, quite honestly, what it was, which was a battle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had basically people battling over Centoya's future.
Yeah.
And honestly, trying to get, you know, one side to care about this young lady and, you know, understand who she is, and the other side saying, well, she committed a crime and should be punished. So really it's a sense of that there's this battle going on. And even though we know as the audience in the back of our minds how it ends up, we still need to be in the middle of that battle when we're watching it.
Mm.
And that's why the music had to take a more sort of thriller aspect to it. Because the other thing as well is we're also perceiving this from Centoya's point of view.
Mm.
You've got all these people in this courtroom talking about her.
Yeah.
And we hardly ever hear, except in the transfer hearing where they, you know, she's able to talk a little about her story, we don't really hear her voice.
Mm.
Especially in the later, you know, in the middle hearings and the criminal hearings and the appeal hearings, we don't really hear her.
Yeah.
So the music had to focus, right, on how did she feel as all these people are talking about her and her future.
Okay.
And it must have been this thriller kind of aspect, because really it's her life is at stake.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to have this sense of danger. It has to have this sense of forward motion. And it also has that sense of instability. And that's one of the reasons, if you really analyze those cues, we do have, like you mentioned before, sort of those cello chugs or those cello ostinatos that are sort of constantly sort of grinding and moving forward.
Yeah.
But underneath that, we actually have these bass hits that come out of nowhere.
Oh, I love those. I love them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the concept behind that was I wanted them to come from areas or come at points,
mm-hmm,
where you couldn't anticipate them.
Mm-hmm.
So that this way they lent this level of instability to the entire cue. In music, we use the bass to judge everything that happens above it. We use the bass, you know, to judge the harmonic structure, mm-hmm, to judge the rhythm. All those things usually come out of the bass. Taking that away, now all of a sudden we've lost this foundation. And then I use that foundation almost as like a projectile to hit you at odd moments or syncopated moments or never on the downbeat,
mm-hmm,
so that this way, you know, we could feel the sense of this world kind of rocking through this music.
Yeah.
And that's how, you know, I envisioned how Centoya must have felt while, you know, these pieces of information are being thrown at her or being thrown at the judge, this sense of, you know, what's going to hit me next and how is that going to affect, you know, my life.
Yeah. I actually, it's funny that you say that, you know, we don't hear her talk, because I thought about the exact thing where the camera focuses on her and the people around her are talking. We may not see the people that are talking, but, like, you know, a lot of time her face is down or she's not, like, looking at the person who is talking to her. Okay, that's really cool. I want to talk about the final piece of music after it's commuted for her. I love how it's lighter. The piano sounds completely different. Yes. And then I love how it sort of moves along into this really sort of encouraging section of music where it makes me feel like, as an audience member, it made me feel like, let's get to work. Let's do more, work with maybe some other cases that might be like this. Can you sort of talk to me about what you wanted to leave us with musically?
Sure, absolutely. So at a certain point in the documentary, there's a turn where the new lawyers come in and they are now building this binder, this case
with
clemency. And that's where I wanted to introduce a new sort of theme, because there's been this transformation within Santoya. She's, you know, at this point, she's completed a few degrees, you know, finished her high school, completed a few college degrees. And there's this overwhelming sentiment of people that are in encouragement and supporting her, right? And saying what a wonderful individual she is. So the music had to change to reflect that. It became more hopeful, and it really wanted to get out of sort of the I wouldn't want to call it darkness, but really more sort of those lower levels or those lower pitches, and really give us something more hopeful, give us something fresh and new. And that's where those sort of lighter piano tones come from, to showing that kind of transformation. And then we begin that final piece of music with that idea, with that motif of this sort of lighter piece of music, because we talk about, we show the conference room where Santoya's getting the news and everybody gets excited about her clemency. And then we go into these series of interviews about Santoya's future. And, you know, if you look at both Elinet and Gina's commentary on Santoya's future, it's a guarded optimism. And they're saying, we wish her well, and we want her to have this new lease on life, but we'll see, you know, what happens. And that's what I think the music had to portray at the end, was a guarded optimism. We didn't want to, and it's funny, the director and I, we went over, I think we redid this cue 4 or 5 different times, because he didn't want to leave. And at first I was like, hey, my first iterations of this final cue were way more optimistic. And, you know, we've won, and now everything's going to be rosy. He said, that's not the message that we want to leave.
Yeah.
We want to leave the message that we don't know what the future's like, and we can't let our guard down. And we have to continue to fight for these children, and we have to continue to support Santoya. She's not out of the woods. So it was really more about a call to action and a rallying call, where we took the Santoya's main theme that we used in the main title and throughout, but gave it more energy and gave it new life, but still it's the same theme, right?
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to leave people saying that everything's going to be rosy now.
Yeah, it's not like a fairy tale ending. It's not like, all right, it's done. Yeah. Right.
No, it's just beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm hoping that that final cue left the audience in that with those thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, it totally did for me. I kept thinking, like, when you say, like, a rallying call, like, I got sort of, like, energized by the music of that ending. I was like, all right, like, there's more to do. Let's see what happens. Like, you're right, it's not over. Not to, like, sort of move away from the documentary, but I, as a final question I wanted to ask, I was looking at some of the things you have coming up. You have a lot of really cool-sounding stuff coming up. But the one that I wanted to ask about was a story that I don't think I had ever heard about, is Voodoo Macbeth.
Oh yeah.
That sounds fucking awesome.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was introduced to that project. I attended the USC University of Southern California's film scoring program. And I did that in 11 and 12, and I met a bunch of great filmmakers, and I met one of the teachers there, John Watson,
mm-hmm.
and worked on a few projects that he was in charge of.
Okay.
So when Voodoo Macbeth came up, which is in coordination with Warner Brothers and USC, a partnership between the two,
mm-hmm.
he thought of me to come in and work on it. And there were two reasons why. One, you know, John is a fan of my work, and he's always been very complimentary of, you know, what I do. But second, the story is about a Harlem theater troupe in the 1930s that takes the story of Macbeth but transforms it and transplants it into something that's theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And they move it into the setting of Haiti and
okay.
turn it into, instead of having the three witches, they're the three voodoo witches. Instead of, you know, certain battle scenes, they take place in Haiti. So the whole setting now is revolving around Haitian culture. And, you know, my father's from Haiti, so mm-hmm. I grew up in Haiti.
Oh, wow.
So it became it was actually very easy for me to get my head around the story and figure out what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And just like how the theater troupe takes or re-envisions Macbeth into something that's germane to their experience and germane to their culture, I was like, well, how can we take sort of this classical kind of art, but then also turn it into something that's germane to, you know, the story and the culture?
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up doing a string ensemble for that, but integrating elements of jazz trumpet, jazz piano, and also Haitian drumming.
Okay.
So it's this interesting cornucopia of sound, right? That at first you're like, oh, that's kind of weird, but I think it came out really wonderful.
Yeah.
And at this point, we're waiting to see what Warner Brothers is going to do with it. They're going to put it on their streaming service.
Okay.
So hopefully we'll have a wide viewership. But it's an interesting story, and it's all based on a true story.
Yeah, I had, when I saw that last night, I went into like a little bit of a deep dive of it. And because, I mean, I studied theater in college, so I was always like, I'm like a sucker for like a really good Shakespeare anything. So when I saw that on like your IMDb page, I was like, what is that? And I looked at it, and then I found out like this whole thing about, like, this sounds incredible. So I'm so excited to check that out whenever it lands somewhere.
Oh,
yeah.
I hope it does land somewhere, because it's not only is it an inspiring story, because obviously there was a lot of adversity that the group had mm-hmm. to overcome because of it. But, you know, it also dealt with people's perceptions of African Americans in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because folks are like, you know, who in Harlem's going to want to go see, you know, Shakespeare?
Yeah.
Nobody cares about Shakespeare. Or how are you going to find actors that are trained, African American actors that are trained to do Shakespeare? So, you know, it was really about all, you know, this troupe showing the world that you can't take your preconceived notions to an entire people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it became a very successful theater show that toured all over the United States.
Oh, my God. That sounds awesome. Oh, my God. That sounds so awesome. I think that's really all I have for you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I love, like I said at the top, I love the score. I love the film. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for inviting me to have, you know, have opportunity to talk about stuff. So
yeah,
I really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
And please let me know when it's going to come out.
I know
this is going to be in written form, or is it a
I usually do. I mean, we can do either or. I think it just depends on the audio quality. We could do it as a podcast. I think it is going to, I have it written here when it's going to come out. Da, da, da. I think Actually, it's just going to be in a couple of days on the 20th. And then, so
that's fast. That's
yeah. So, I mean, I can do it as a podcast if you're comfortable with that. I'll just have my editor check if the audio is good. If the audio is not, like if it's kind of shaky or a little too quiet, I can just transcribe it. It'll be more in like a Q&A format. So it'll be posted on our site on the 20th, but then it won't, the like social media blast won't go out until like during the week, I think.
Got it. Well, whatever you think is best, I think I didn't stumble or miss my
word. No, not at all. Not at all.
So if you want to use it as a podcast, I'm totally comfortable with that.
Sure.
So it depends on whatever you think.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll send it over to my editor to see if it sounds good. If not, it'll just be like Q&A, and we'll like tag you and all the social stuff.
Okay, awesome.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Really
appreciate
it. You know, because not only is it great to find that people are appreciating the music, mm-hmm. but I mean, with the Murder to Mercy, it's just such a galvanizing and inspiring story
mm-hmm.
that if we can get more people to understand it, hopefully it will inspire them to do the changes that we need in prison reform and in our judiciary system.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I know some like other writers for the site, they've definitely, like when, you know, the blast came out, it was like, you know, we were sending out a list of a bunch of composers to talk to, and a couple of the other writers, I will say, they're like, oh, I saw that movie, it was really good. So
that's great.
Yeah All right. Well, thanks again. I hope you stay safe.
Enjoy your move.
Oh yeah.
Your new home.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully it won't be a bumpy ride.
Well,
yeah.
Let's just hope you land safely no matter where.
Yeah. All right. Well, hope you have a good rest of your day, and thank you again.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.